and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 10 o'clock. Actually, it's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next couple hours, we're going to talk about car repair, new cars, old cars, technology, just about anything that your heart desires, we can help you out. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. As I get older and older and older, I find out stuff that is just amazing to me. And let me tell you a story. The story goes like this. A lady is driving her 2015 car down the freeway, and I guess the freeway is 6, 7, 8 lanes wide. And as traffic comes to a slowdown, all the lanes, then she's rear-ended by somebody, and it changes her speed by about 20 miles an hour. So if, let's pretend she was doing 10, and as they hit her from the back, she went to 30. Just kind of round figures, okay? So it's kind of a hard hit, but not bad. And so her car's stopped right there. And the entertainment system where you can call for help, it comes on and it's talking to her. And there is a conversation that's taped. And they're asking her if she's okay. They said, we see that, you know, you've had a crash. And so they're talking to her. For 3.5 minutes, they're talking to her. But one of the things that she's complaining about is her car won't start. It won't start. Today we know it wasn't really that it wouldn't start. It wouldn't crank over. It wouldn't go like that. So during this 3.5 minutes, she's in the car. She's frantic. I understand. I haven't heard the tape. She's frantic. And the car won't start. And she wants them to help her. And then a limousine doing about 70 miles an hour creams her and kills her. So what we find out is that this particular automobile has an explosive device, a pyrotechnic, they call it, on the positive battery cable. And when the car is involved in a wreck, when the computer sees airbag deployments and some of this other stuff, it will disable the electrical system. Now, clearly it doesn't disable all the electrical system, because she's able to talk to the people in the cloud. She's able to talk to help. So then the problem becomes the safety device took away her ability to start her car and pull off to the side of the road, which probably would have eliminated the limo driver burying the limo in the back of her car. And he was doing 70 miles an hour when he hit her. So it's kind of an unintended consequence. On one hand, the idea of killing the engine, killing the fuel pump, and taking away a lot of the electrical system, because this car's computers saw this happen, and it has a command where it says, blow up this little pyrotechnic. We're going to sever the positive battery cable. And so we're not going to let that happen. But there's still another circuit for her to be able to talk to the people on the entertainment system. So now everybody's wondering how good of an idea this is. Up until that point, I think most all of us in the mechanical field and in the accident reconstructionist field, we thought that would kind of be good. Obviously, if you get rear-ended and your fuel pump is still running and your gasoline tank is compromised, we're going to have 30, 40, 50 pounds of fuel being sprayed all over where it hits the exhaust, catches the car on fire. Now you're in really deep trouble. So on that side of the coin, it's a good thing. But this is an unintended consequence that I don't know if anybody thought about. And so as I've talked with other experts that I respect about this particular situation and repair shops that work on this kind of car, you say to yourself, we're all saying to ourselves, wow, we never thought this would have been it. And quite honestly, I think that the car makers did the same thing. Now, as a former policeman and talking to a lot of former policemen, we all understand that when you have a traffic accident, as long as someone's not seriously hurt, it's a good idea to get the cars off the road. You see that every morning here in Phoenix. You see every morning where they have an accident, they've pulled them off to the right or pulled them into the center median or they've blocked the HOV lane with the car crashes. They do that. They do that to effectively move traffic and to take the people out of peril. So you'll see the two cars in the HOV lane. You'll see policemen behind them, protecting them. And you might see three, four, or five police cars behind them. But the problem is that when you blow that positive cable off the battery, then you eliminate the police from moving that car, and you eliminate the driver from moving that car. And in this situation, no one will ever know, but I think common sense says that if the limo hit her in the back end at 70 miles an hour, probably did a lot of damage. But there's nothing to suggest that she couldn't have started it up and driven it off to the side of the road. Now, there's always a possibility that he hit her in the back and he compromised the fuel tank, and so when she turns the key on, then we're spraying fuel all over everywhere. That's a possibility. But frankly, many of us have not seen that happen. Many of us haven't seen that. And we used to have what we called an inertia switch in some of the Fords. And the inertia switch was in the back of the car on the driver's side. And when the car hit something, even hit a curb, then the inertia switch would kick off the ignition system and the car would die. And that was in the Fords in the 90s, I think, for maybe 3 or 4 years at the most. And the problem with that was is you could walk along the car at night in a movie theater or wherever, and you could take your fist and you could hit hard the left rear corner of the car, and you could trip the switch, which would mean that the person would never get the car running. So if you decided to be devious, you could do that. And I'm not going to tell you where you have to hit, but there's a sweet spot you hit. So you can, and you don't dent the metal, so don't go out there and start beating up everybody's cars, because the idea is that you now have to know kind of where the sweet spot is. So we're all kind of thinking about this, and if you have a comment on that, then you can make it 602-508-0960. But there's two sides of the issue. We're trying to protect our customer, we're trying to protect the driver from a fuel leak or an electrical malfunction that causes an electrical fire or a fuel fire. We're trying to protect them. On the other hand, we're taking away the driver's ability to get out of harm's way and the police department's ability to move the car. So we have to kind of balance those two things together. Let me tell you a story about an inertia switch. This guy's getting off the freeway, and he says that he has the stereo up so loud that the inertia switch turned off his engine. And so he couldn't make a proper right turn, but he kind of made a right angle. And he went up over the median, and there was this poor person, unfortunate person, I should say, holding a sign that says, you know, I'm a vet, or I need money, or I need gas money, or whatever. And he kills him. So the issue then becomes, this is an unusual circumstance. He says his stereo killed the engine. That prevented him from making a hard right turn. And then, of course, because he couldn't make the right turn, he tried to make it, and he got it halfway through. He went, you know, he was going to make a right and go eastbound, and he ran over the person in the center median. So we took the car. This is a true story. We took the car over to a stereo shop, and we asked him to find the biggest, baddest stereo system he could find. And we asked him, we said, if you can get the car there, we're going to park our car next to your car. And then we want you to rattle the windows on the car that was involved in the crash. Rattle the windows. Now, in addition to that, we took these inertia switches and we mounted them on a variety of metal items, and we circled the car. And so they gave us a Hummer who somebody had spent tens of thousands of dollars to build this monster stereo system that could literally blow the windows out of the Hummer. So we parked everything there, and we had all these inertia switches all around the Hummer. We had the car next to there, and our intention was is to turn the stereo up until we broke a window or until, you know, we just couldn't stand it anymore. We all had headphones or earmuffs on and stuff. And so we turned the stereo up, and you can see the windows shaking in buildings. You can see the windows shaking in the cars. You can see things dancing along the desks of the guys at the stereo shop. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing. And it never tripped a single inertia switch that we had set up. It never. So the fact that we were thumping and bumping this big stereo system with big, huge bass speakers and stuff kind of eliminated the idea that the inertia switch tripped and caused his inability to make a sharp right turn. Never mind that there was
2 minutes
drugs and alcohol involved. Never mind that. But it was an interesting defense with respect to this my car, and that's kind of the world I live in. I either prove or disprove those kinds of things. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I got some emails, and one of the emails just recently was how do you jumpstart a diesel vehicle? And the reason why that question is being asked is this. A diesel vehicle typically has two batteries, especially the trucks. And the question then becomes is, how do I jumpstart two and bring a dead diesel vehicle alive? Or how can I jumpstart from my diesel vehicle to my car and jumpstart my car? And the answer is nothing has changed. Positive to positive, red to positive, black to negative, and you're only going to use one of the two batteries in the diesel. And here's why. Because the batteries are hooked in series. Otherwise, the positive cable of battery number one goes to the positive cable of battery number two, and then from battery number two, everything else spreads out. So we have it's called in parallel, I think. We've got two batteries, positive to positive and negative to negative. So you can jumpstart from either battery you want. And as a result of that, it makes no difference. But just remember, red is positive, black is negative, but you have to look at the terminals to determine which ones they are. And usually it'll have a positive number next to the positive terminal and then a negative bar next to the negative terminal. But when you're jumpstarting to or from a diesel vehicle, the procedure is exactly the same. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us and join the conversation, or if you have a car question, if you have a car dilemma, if you've been told you need some specific repairs and you want to talk about that, you're welcome to give us a call, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service. They've been fixing cars in Tempe since 1972, and David, the owner, and I have been friends since then. IMM is really good at prioritizing your work, which means they're not going to try to sell you and flush your wallet every time you come in. They're going to give you a to-the-penny estimate that includes tax. They're only going to do the authorized work and the work necessary to fix the symptom you brought it in for. Nothing more, nothing less. He has ASE Master technicians that work on domestic and imports, but they specialize in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles, which includes Volvos, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos. So if you have one of those cars, everybody can change the oil, but when it gets down to heavy-duty diagnosis for drivability, no-start conditions, engine misses, you'll probably need IMM Auto Service to really track it down the most efficient way. Again, IMM Auto Service.
Mike is your first caller, Mike.
In the northeast corner of Tempe, just south of the 202 and just west of the 101. Mike, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a 06 Kia Spectra. It's got about 100,000 miles on it. And I know you always do a 1 to 10. I'm thinking of changing the back brakes. Is that something I can do?
Have you ever done them before?
Because I'm hearing, I've done the front. Yeah, I've done on other vehicles.
Okay.
But I'm hearing like a little squeaking in the back, like maybe it's the indicator.
Okay.
I have Go ahead.
The indicator is going to be on light braking, and you should be able to pedal right through it. So if on normal braking, you get the, but then on heavy braking, it goes away, then I would agree with you that the squeaker is probably dragging.
Yeah. I was thinking of just doing it myself. I know my, I don't know if we should have to replace the drum or the discs when you do that, or.
Well, there's a lot of opinions on that. If you don't have a pedal that pulsates, and when you apply the brake at 50, 60 miles an hour, there's no vibration that's generated throughout the car. And if none, the rear rotors aren't grooved, and they might have a slight record player kind of look to them that you can barely feel with your fingernails, then a pad slap might be what you want. Is this the original brakes on this 100,000-mile Kia?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's the problem you're going to have. You're going to have to collapse the piston in order to get the new fat pads back into the caliper. And in the front ones, you probably used a big C-clamp, and you just pushed the piston back in. But on the back ones, you're probably going to have to wind those pistons back in. And I know that old gray-haired guys like me are going to use a pair of needle-nose pliers and a screwdriver through the jaws, and we're just going to wind that thing in. But if you take it off and you can't wind it back in, then you probably ought to quit there and not tear up the caliper. And then just take your car in and have somebody swap the pads for you. A lot of us won't swap pads and that's all. We'd like to put a dial indicator on the rotor and see if it's warped. And we'd also like to look at the minimum and maximum thickness. And if it's close to the minimum thickness, it won't do another 100,000 miles. So we want to tell you that. But if it's really, truly close to maximum thickness, then, and we've got a 3 or 4 thousandths warp in it, then we'd go ahead and take what we call a finished cut on it and remove very little metal, but straighten it up and put it right back on. I'll tell you, minus your pads, your rear axle brakes is going to be, give or take, $50. It's going to be right around $200, and that's pads and labor and machining of the rotors is about $200 plus or minus $50.
Okay, so that's not a big deal then.
No,
I was thinking maybe even just buying the rotors, you know, from AutoZone or whatever, because they're pretty cheap from what I heard.
Well, you know, I went into one of the auto parts stores yesterday for a big plastic thermostat housing on a little Ford V6, and I was surprised to find that thermostat housing was sold for $136, which is a big amount of money over what I'm buying it for, and it's pretty doggone close what I sell it for. So I was surprised by that. However, you know, I don't really spend my life comparing prices from those guys and mine. I'll tell you that if it came in a box that was from Bendix or a Wagner or some of the other major brake companies, I wouldn't have any problems with it. But if it came in a plain white box, I'd probably ask to step it up one notch in quality.
So real quick on that caliber, is that caliber just corkscrew in like a regular screw?
Yeah.
Like righty-tighty, lefty-loosey?
That's normally, yes, the answer is yes. But there's also going to be some slots in the caliper that match the buttons or a groove in your back pad. Mm-hmm. And that pad is going to hold that caliper steady or not let it walk. And oftentimes it will let it move. So you have to make sure that when you take that back pad off, the inner pad on one of the sides on the rears, just look how it's clocked on the piston and make sure you end up there.
Make a mark.
Yeah.
Make a mark or something, yeah.
Yeah, what I do is I just take a center punch and, you know, the 12 o'clock one, I turn the caliper over and, you know, the piston's at 12 o'clock and I just tap the piston and put a little center punch mark on it and then I know where it's at.
Okay.
Sounds good luck.
Great, Mark.
All right, you betcha.
All right, man, thank you.
You bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's another shop in town.
We have another mic.
Okay. Hang on, Mike. The mic number two will be right with you. There's another shop in town I want to tell you about, and I'm really proud of Larry Harker's Auto. It's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. It's been around since 1967. But Bob, the guy who runs the shop and owns the shop, his wife actually, he works for his wife, Ellen, who runs the front counter. But Bob is one of the best diagnosticians that I've ever met. So if you have one of those cars and you say, I've had it to three or four different places and nobody can find it or fix it, then I would suggest that you call Larry Harker's Auto and check in with them. Not too long ago, they fixed a Dodge truck nobody else could fix. And that's pretty impressive, especially when you have this problem. I'll give you another example. There was not too long ago where this diesel truck was there, and it had been to three or four other shops, and everybody had done a bunch of work, totaling $2,000 or so. And Bob found that there was a hole in the top of the piston. And it was a diesel truck, and it was a Ford, and it was a 6-liter, but the injector had stuck wide open and blown a hole in the piston. There was no fixing that truck by putting on a FICM, a Ford ignition module. No fixing that truck by putting a new injector on it for $800 like somebody else said that they would fix it. There was a lot of trying to fix it, but nobody really understood how important it was to drop a camera down the injector, in the injector hole and look down there, and then you can see this huge hole in the piston. And of course, that motor's never going to be a good motor again. So Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, a good place to go. Mike, I know you're there, but I'm up against a break, so I'm going to ask you to hold, and we're going to be back to you in about 3 minutes. So if you want to go grab something to eat or you want to go mow the grass, then you can do that. The rest of you, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon right here on KKNT, and we're here to help you out with your car problems and your car questions. We'll be back. All about that. Well, thank you for holding through the break. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking car and car repair. The name of this show is Under the Hood. My name is Mark Salem, and my email address is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. Mike, like we promised, we're coming right to you. How can I help you?
Well, I've got the wife mowing the lawn, so I'm glad I waited. She's doing a good job out there, too. Go ahead.
No, I'm not touching that.
we're in the process of inheriting a 1992 Plymouth Voyager, and it hasn't ran, I want to say, probably since 2005. It's just been sitting. And the wife wants to see, to get it up and running, and I told her, well, it's all going to variable on every fluid known to man, and it's going to need to probably be drained and refilled, and the fuel system and everything probably needs to be done just to get it running. How much, just ballpark figure, is she looking at if we take it down to some place and have them get it up and running and change all those fluids?
Well, I don't agree that you change all the fluids. I want to just kind of refocus you in this. I want it to start, run, and stop. Okay, those are the three things you want right now. So obviously the battery is going to probably have to be addressed one way or the other. So we need to get it cranked over. It's easy to just suck all the old fuel out, put in 5 gallons of fresh fuel. It's easy to change the fuel filter. A lot of times you take the filter off and you blow through it, and it blows through like a straw. You say, heck with it, I'm going to put that back in. And so you turn the key on and make sure the electric fuel pump inside the tank is going to buzz for you and develop pressure. If not, you're going to crawl underneath the back of the vehicle and you're going to beat the heck out of the bottom of the tank with a rubber mallet while somebody is cycling the key on, count to three, turn it off. Cycle the key to the on position, not the crank position, the on position, and do that, because a lot of times we can jar the fuel pump into operation, and then you can decide later whether you want to replace it. So once we get it running, then if we have good vacuum, then we go take it for a test drive, and if the brakes work, then you're home free. At that point, you put it back into service, you get it through emissions, you put it back into service, you keep it close by, you put $8 a year or $12 a year from your insurance company for a towing policy, and you drive it. And we do that, and a lot of other shops do that all the time, but I can't give you a dollar figure. I can tell you this much. We had a 62 Ford Falcon come in that hadn't run for 20 years. My wife is sitting here next to me, so I'm looking at her, but I'm going to turn up her microphone too. It's about time you woke up.
I know, it is.
You know, if you wouldn't drink all night long, you wouldn't sleep until 10 o'clock.
Yeah, actually, I've been out working.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, garage sailing is what you
mean. Yeah,
sure. But anyway, the 63 Ford Falcon, we put a fuel pump on it. We cleaned the carburetor up with some carb spray.
Yeah.
We have put a battery in it.
Put new gas in. I think we had to get a new tank because I think the tank was leaking.
So. And it was leaking gas. It was rusted out. So we got a used tank for it.
Right.
And we put it all together and we got it to start. Then we had to do some brake work on it because 20 years. So we got the brake and we had to do a master on it, master cylinder. So we got the brakes to work. So today it starts, runs, and stops.
Yes.
Do you have any idea? And you can't count some of that other work that's gone above and beyond that. But I'm thinking we were probably in the 2 to 3 to 350 range of battery. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then a master cylinder and
200 to 300.
I'm going to change that. You're right. Okay. I mean, because the battery alone's $100.
Yeah.
So two mains.
So you're talking 300 to 500. Can you live with that? With a fuel pump, a master cylinder, and a battery? And a tank, a used tank.
Yeah, see, I want to say it was a little bit more than that because it was an older car, too, and so we had a little bit of trouble finding it. There wasn't a lot of, you know, stuff. So I would say even 1,000, but.
Okay. I don't think it's, but as I add it up in my head, I'm going to go north of 500 then, okay?
Yeah.
So, and it's a step-by-step process because we're going to call you about the battery. And then once we get it to crank over, we're going to call you the fuel pump's leaking fuel. And then once we get it, then once we know that the tank is leaking, then we're going to call you on that. So it's an evolution. But, if you've got the car for nothing, then if you need a second car or if you can give it to one of the kids or grandkids, that's a handsome thing. But if you're just going to fix it up and then park it in your garage and let it get old again, I'm not quite sure I agree with that.
1 minute.
Right. I agree with that also. So. Okay. But why isn't she out mowing the lawn like my wife, Mark?
You know,
she's working. I am.
She was antiquing this morning at garage sales.
No, I wasn't.
And I tell you something else. I got to tell you something.
What?
I went over to Larry's to get my battery charger off.
Yeah, I saw that big sale, and I didn't even have time to stop because I was too busy.
I already did. I bought a lawnmower for $10.
Oh, no.
Yep. That's about the 10th one we've had.
Yeah, like we need another lawnmower.
Yeah, I found one for $10, and the blade is hitting a piece of metal underneath. I'm sure I can get it running. And it's a nice one. It's a Craftsman.
Yeah.
Number two, I bought a 2X full-faced helmet for $45. You know the helmet I have?
Yeah.
It just fits too tight. This one is perfect. 2X, and it's perfect. So all I have to do is have that guy move my head and my microphone into my new helmet.
Oh, I was going to say, you just want to get that so you don't have to listen to me when you're driving, right?
No. Remember that button on the handlebar? Yeah. That's the one that mutes you when we're driving.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, good luck to you, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mark. All right,
you betcha. Daniel, you and Joe, stay right there. We're going to take a quick break now that my wife has interrupted the boys' cave time.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we're going to get you. We've got two lines open, too, as well, 602-508-0960 for Renee and Mark Salem. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. Nadine and Stacy opened Air Park Auto Service in 1985. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, in the northeast corner of Scottsdale. Stacy passed away, but Nadine has always been the owner and operator since the very beginning and continues to be there. They've been on my best car repair shops list for years and years. They're a state-of-the-art, clean, and green facility. They have the diagnostic tools. They service most makes and models of vehicles and small trucks. And if they're not the best person for your vehicle, they'll let you know, and that's pretty admirable. So if you live in North Scottsdale area and you don't have a garage, may I suggest Air Park Auto Service on Raintree, just east of Hayden. Daniel, good morning. Thank you for holding. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I wanted to ask you, I have an 08 Dodge Dakota pickup, and I'm probably going to need new brake drums. Now, if I buy them, do they need to be turned when they're put on the truck with new brakes, rear brakes?
You know, that you're going to, half of the guys are going to say yes, and half of the guys are going to say no, and I'm going to tell you this. I would wash them with soap and water. I wouldn't put them on with all the preservatives on there. If you have a pressure washer, it's even better with a little soap. I'd put them on. They're not that hard to take off, and if you go drive it and you apply the brakes, and it has a nice, smooth, gradual stop, and there's no vibration associated with it, and all you did is the rear brakes, and then you did your test drive, then you're fine. The downside is that if you have a little bit of a vibration, then you got to take the tires off and the drums off and go have them turned. But in reality, most of the time you don't. Now, one more thing. This drum brake, you know how it slides over the studs and hits the flange, the axle flange?
Yes.
Okay. Make doggone sure you clean up the axle flange, and here's why. A lot of times there's lots of trash in the brakes, and so when you slide the old drum off, we contaminate the axle flange. So when we put the drum on it, we don't have a flat-to-flat mating. So we've got dirt and grease and grime in between the drum and the axle flange, and that'll cause you'd think the drums are warped, so you'll cut them until you don't have any drum left, and in reality, all you did is crush a bunch of trash in between the drum and the hub. Okay?
Okay, that makes sense. I haven't changed them yet, but I noticed that there is some vibration, you know, when you're braking and stuff now. So, but good possibility. I mean, the drums are probably to the level where they're probably going to need to be replaced.
Well, let's talk about that. You have drum on the rear and disc on the front?
Correct.
Okay. When you apply the brakes, is the vibration in the seat of your pants or is it in your steering wheel?
I feel it more in the seat of my pants because I had the front brakes done about a year ago.
Okay. Well, that wouldn't make any difference to me because you can still overheat a rotor and warp one and stuff. But if it's in the seat of your pants and it only happens when you're braking, and if the harder you push the brake, the bigger and badder the vibration is, then I agree. You've probably got a warped drum or something like that. But if you're going to put two new drums on there, that still doesn't mean you have to turn the new ones. You're throwing the old ones away anyway.
Sure.
And on one other thing, when you pull the drum off there, get your garden hose out and rinse off the drum inside and out and rinse off all the brakes. And hence, you're going to be washing all that asbestos away, and so you're not going to be breathing it. So you wet it down good, and there's nothing on your brake system that water will hurt. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you, Mark.
You betcha. Joe, you're up next. Joe, how can I help you today?
Yeah, I had that 2004 Volkswagen with a vibration in it a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I went and I did the test that you mentioned about shifting from park, forward, reverse. And it seemed like it's I could not detect any change in the vibration.
Okay. All right. So I'll just cover it real quick. You have a vibration that you can probably feel in the steering wheel. You can see on the dashboard, and it's predominantly there when you're sitting still, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So I had you start the car up, and I had you close your eyes. My son, remember when Alan made fun of me of this? And I said, you know, close your eyes, and then you're going to go from park to reverse, and pay attention to the vibration, then neutral, then drive, then neutral, then reverse, and then park. And I had you move up and down the shift, and nothing changed, right?
Yeah, I couldn't detect when shifting.
Okay.
I couldn't detect any change in the vibration.
Okay, and that's okay. That's okay, because I can tell you, no matter what you do for a living, if it would have changed, you would have known it. It's just as obvious as all get out. You would have known that. So the next question is I want you to do is I want you to get it to where it's vibrating bad, and it's probably going to be in drive or reverse, one of the other the load capabilities, and I want you to just give it a tad idle and answer this question. Will 1 or 200 RPM make the vibration go away? Now, last but not least, this kind of a, would you sit in my car and let me show you the vibration and talk to me about it? Most shops, this is a $25, $35, $45 deal if they charge you. Most of us, if you're our customers, that 20-minute sit and talk to you kind of thing, as long as you don't abuse it, and we're still there an hour and a half later. But if you just, you know, point out what you got and ask us if we can, you know, at least get close to the diagnosis, then most of us will do that. Do you have a repair shop that you've used before and you like?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. You know, not on Monday morning or Friday night for obvious reasons, but you could stop by and just learn how to make it happen as good as you can and stop by and just say, hey, Joe, how are you? I got this vibration Would it be too much to ask if you could assign one of your techs just for a few minutes? I promise I won't take him around the block or kidnap him for an hour. Just have him come out and I can demonstrate it. Now, another good idea is the transmission shops, and they're really good at vibrations. Tranny guys are always been the best when it comes to vibration. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in North Scottsdale.
Okay.
The Bite Air Park.
Okay. I don't have a transmission shop up there to send you to. I'm sure there's some up there, but I just don't have one I would refer you to. So you could stop, if you wanted to, you could stop by Air Park or your regular shop, either one. Okay?
All right. Do you have time for another one?
Yeah, real quick.
Another question?
Yeah, go ahead.
2001 Silverado, the ABS light comes on and off, and the brake light, the red brake light,
okay,
and the amber ABS light. I'll drive it for a little while, and then they'll come. They'll both come on.
Okay, you have to understand that this is a serious problem. It's not that the amber or the yellow ABS light is on, because your owner's manual and every other owner's manual in the world says that orange means caution, orange means continue, orange means, you know, just have it addressed whenever you can. So if you're on your way back from Los Angeles and you get an orange light, just go on home and take it into the shop the next day. Contrary to what there was a case not too long ago at the Attorney General's office where they claimed that a car had to be stopped and towed in for a check engine light, which is amber, and nothing is further from the truth than that statement right there. So, but I am worried about the red brake light. Red means stop.
Okay.
Red means your life's in danger. So I'm worried about the red one. I don't care about the ABS. You probably got a bad wheel sensor on that Silverado, that old one that's 16 years old. And we plug in our scanner and we go drive your car in tight circles, and somebody sits on the passenger side and I drive the car, and I'm going fast and slow, hard turn, right turn. We go to a shopping mall and just do circles, and pretty soon we're going to figure out which sensor's bad. But you need to have that addressed. And the red brake light could be a fluid issue, it could be a pressure issue, or it could be a master cylinder issue. So you'll have to be on your toes to diagnose that. And don't buy an ABS module for $2,000 because your neighbor said that's what it is, because that's a bad idea.
He should have a code in there, right?
Yes. Yeah. He'll have a code in there. On both of those, you'll have a code.
Yeah.
So, and the code will tell you
it's
approximately
fluid,
where it's at.
The fluid is full, so I checked that.
Yeah, then it's got to be something else. So.
Well, but how many times have we seen the float bad in the master cylinder?
Yeah, that could be it.
You know, so we have to look at everything, and we have to manipulate the float or the design of the master to make certain that what it's telling the computer and the dashboard is true. So sometimes we literally take, you know, a pocket knife and scrape the metal contacts, and all of a sudden everything starts working because the yellow the contacts were covered with boogers. So you just scrape it off and you're all done. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I wanted to create a mental
that was
picture.
Way too visual.
Okay. All right. Anyway, thank you very much, Joe. Let's see who's next here. Jerry. Jerry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay. Hey, first-time caller. Look, I'm calling in response to the previous guy that was starting the old car. I'm a little concerned. I have an old Camaro that I haven't started in a long time, and I'm a little concerned that maybe we need to coat the cylinder walls or do something to get the crank oiled back up. I had a mechanic tell me one time you could do more damage in 10 seconds than you'd do in 20,000 miles if you just try to cold start something. Do you have any suggestions there?
Well, I don't agree with what you were told. Can you turn down your radio in the background? Okay, perfect.
It's not on. I'm sorry. I'm studying in the parking lot at Home Depot. Maybe.
Okay. All righty. No problem. Let's talk about this from a pragmatic point of view. You don't really think that your car, your Camaro, is going to pop within the first boom, okay? It's not. We're going to have to prime the fuel system. We're going to have to exercise the motor with the starter. And I promise you that within the first 3 seconds of cranking, providing that you have oil in the car, we're going to start squirting oil all over those cylinders. And I know your car isn't going to start until we've cranked it over for 60 seconds over, you know, 2 or 3 hours. So it's going to be a situation yeah. where it's going to be 15 seconds here, 30 seconds here, or whatever. But you have nothing to worry about. I don't know where that came from. We've always had instant oil pressure when you hit the key. And we know that we're going to crank these older cars over a lot. So if the customer insists, we'll pull all the spark plugs out of it and squirt some oil in there. But you run a risk of doing that, of hydraulic in the cylinder and bending the rods. So you better know how much
yeah,
is
okay,
too much. But my suggestion yeah. to you is pull the coil wire on your, you said it was an old Camaro, pull the coil wire on the Camaro and just
yeah.
crank it over to the count of 10 and then walk away. Go have your wife get your beer, come back, crank it over to the count of 10 and do that 3, 4, 5 times. And I assure you, if it's got oil in it, that you'll have the oils, the cylinders oiled down pretty good.
So you're talking about a 5-year process here, right?
You caught me there.
Because his wife's not bringing him a beer, so he's got to wait a while.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough. Whatever the situation is,
thanks, man.
It's not that bad, you know that. But thank you for making us laugh. Thank you. All righty, let's go to Harold. Harold, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark. My question relates to two of your favorite products, the Ford Explorer and the Ford F-150. Both products have been getting very bad press this week. The Explorer problem apparently relates to exhaust getting into the cabin. Some policemen are not using Explorers anymore, and now some civilians have come forward saying they've got the same problem. Then I heard yesterday there's an over million vehicle recall on Ford F-150 trucks, because you think the doors are closed and latched, but they're apparently sometimes are not. And there is apparently some kind of a fix for that. But I wondered if you could comment on that.
Okay, I can, but it's going to take longer than the time I have. So I'm gonna say goodbye to you. Thank you for bringing that up. But on the other top, at the top of the hour, because I'm up against some time frame here, I'm going to comment on both of those and tell you what I know and tell you what I think. Real quick, though, I want to cover something I needed to do a little while ago, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Thompson's has been around, the name Thompson's has been around fixing cars in Mesa for probably 30 or 40 years. They've been providing expert auto and light truck repair maintenance services. They have ASE certified technicians. They're going to do a good job, and you only have to meet Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, who run Thompson's, to know that they are the nicest, kindest, salt of the earth people you've ever met. They really, really do go the extra step for their customers. So they're on Main Street, just east of Stapley, on the south side of the road. Main and Stapley, just east on the south side of the road. Thompson's Auto Repair. If you don't have an auto repair shop and you live in that general area or anywhere in Mesa, because he's the only one in Mesa that I put my name next to, then Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing would be a good place to go. My name is Mark Salem. The phone number is 602-508-0960. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Ford Explorer and the F-150 and some of the recalls and what Mark thinks about all of that. We'll be back right after this.
To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have a couple of lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us if you want. Let me get some business taken care of here. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call them ATE, but it stands for Automatic Transmission Exchange. If you've been up and down Washington on a regular basis, then you can't help but see on the north side of the road at 40th Street Automatic Transmission Exchange in their sign, because they've been there since 1968. Phil and his staff are really good at what they do. And for free, they'll talk to you and drive your car. They're not going to let you take an hour's worth of their time, but if you can demonstrate the problem, they're happy to have somebody sit with you and go take a drive. But Phil and his staff are really good. And Phil wants to remind you that not even 20, 25% of the transmissions he sees need to be overhauled. Many of them can be fixed with replacing a part or making an adjustment. So again, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Alrighty, real quick. Harold asked about the Ford recalls, and there's 1.3 million Explorers, and then there's a million or more F-150s for a door latch. Here's what bothers me about the Explorer thing. Ford has been saying all along that it's only police cars. Ford has been saying all along that the police cars, when they mount radios and sirens and all this electronics, that they have to drill holes into the engine compartment to bring wires into the engine compartment to attach to the battery for power and other things. So they're saying it's just police cars. Well, it turns out it's not police cars. So then Ford put a new tip on the back of the police cars to redirect the exhaust in case it was swirling around in the back and coming in the back window. That didn't help it. Then Ford says they don't know what it is. Now we have a recall, or they're thinking about a recall, but they so much as say, we still don't know what it is, but you're okay. Now folks, there's something wrong with that statement. I'm gonna say, I don't know what's the matter with your car, but you're okay. And I think the common response is if you don't know what's the matter with my car, you can't say I'm gonna be okay. That's all there is to it. Ford's got this backwards. Ford says it wants to offer peace of mind to owners of more than 1.35 million Explorers concerned about exhaust fumes. So that Ford's gonna inspect and repair the vehicles, if necessary, for free. The safety communication says the customer is taking voluntary action, although it has notified the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, who has an open investigation involving complaints involving 2011 to 2017 Explorers. Ford maintains the vehicles are safe, but said it's making the repairs available in response to customer concerns. Mark Salem says, in response to nobody's buying the doggone car anymore because nobody wants to be asphyxiated and pass out and hit a tree. So we know some of our customers do have some exhaust and carbon monoxide concerns. There is a NHTSA investigation on the matter, and we know there's some awareness. Yeah. Then Ford says, these customers might also have seen media reports of the situations. These vehicles are safe. We have not found any safety issue here. So, we all agree that there's some kind of an exhaust issue. We have videotape of police cars running off the road hitting trees. And Ford says, don't worry about it. And then you say, well, what's wrong? I don't know, but don't worry about it. As far as the trucks are concerned, here's the problem. And there's a problem inside the door and the latch. Now, you have a double latch on every door on every car. You have the first latch, and then you have a second latch that sucks the door in where it's flush with the metal around it. So what they're saying is that the first latch doesn't catch, and then the second latch comes apart. And they talk about salt and mud and water and rain and all that kind of stuff, which would, if it's true that that's the issue, then it would predominantly be in those states that suffer from the salt, the mud, the snow, the rain. So that would pretty much eliminate Arizona. But anyway, either one, if your car is in recall, you got to take it in. You got to take it in. And sooner or later, Ford will wake up to the problem and fix it. But just like the Firestone 500 or the Firestone 721 tires, and just like a variety of other recalls, including Chevrolet and Ford and Chrysler, they just won't do anything until the public stops buying their cars or until the government finally decides to make them. And that's the issue as far as those are concerned. So that's the Explorer, that's the F-150 comments, and those are on behalf of Harold and Mark Salem. Bernie, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning, Bernie?
Good morning, Mark. You addressed this problem about a year ago, but I didn't pay much attention. My wife's Jeep, when she turns it on about once or twice a week, one of the other rear windows will roll down.
Wow. I don't know that I've ever seen or heard that before, but how many miles are on the Jeep?
Almost 200,000.
Okay. All right. I think one of the things that I would do is, I'd probably do this in the summertime when she's going to run her air all the time, but I'd probably pop out that master switch and I would just unplug it. And what that's going to do is it's going to separate the master switch from all the window motors. So if you unplug the master switch and everything is fine and the window no longer goes up and down, then you plug the master switch back in, and yes, it begins to do that, then the master switch is the culprit. But if you disconnect the master switch and you still have the problem, then it's very likely we've got some kind of voltage or ground problem that shouldn't be there, because that's how we're going to control the window motor up and down, is we reverse the polarity. So we have positive negative on the way up and negative positive on the way down, and that's what the master switch does. If the master switch looks really worn, and if you will admit to your wife that you spilled a milkshake from Wendy's on the master switch, then I'm going to focus more on the master switch than anything else.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bernie. You're welcome. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
Joe is your next caller, Joe.
Our best car repair shop lists at our website, marksalem.com, has been updated recently. You might want to take a look. It's important to make sure your shop is still there, because my guarantee that says this: if you use one of the shops on my best car repair shop list and you have problems, if you file a nice complaint, and listen to that word nice, nice complaint with the Better Business Bureau, they will investigate the complaint. If the shop is told to make a refund or to fix your car and my shop refuses to do that, not my personal shop, but one of the shops on my best car repair shops list, then I will do it for you. I'll give you the refund up to $5,000, or I'll fix your car up to $5,000. So you have my personal guarantee on my website. And I'll tell you something, since 1988, I've never had to pay a dime, because the shops I pick are guys that know right from wrong. And when it comes time for them to raise their hands and say, I messed up, I'm sorry, I'm going to fix it. Now, if you'll accept that, I'm sorry, I'm going to fix it, and assume and come to the conclusion that it is fixed and you don't want pain and suffering, then you're home free. But anyway, they're really, really a good list of shops, but there's been some movement, and some have voluntarily left the list and some have not. So if you use one of my shops and you rely on my expertise in helping guide you, then I'd like you to check it a couple times a year, two times a year. All righty. And who was the next caller, Gil?
Joe.
Joe, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I've got a digital dash that's going out on my 2010 Lincoln MKZ. Some of the digits are missing, and I can't even tell you how many miles I have on my car because I can't read it. I was just wondering where I could take that to get it fixed. I checked the fuse, and the fuse is okay, so I think it's going to have to be replaced.
Okay, I have a couple of things I want you to do. What year is that MKZ? What year?
2010.
Okay.
MKZ.
All righty. I don't know if that has light bulbs that sometimes go out, but yes, we've done that repair before. And what we do is we take the car and cover it with a bunch of big moving blankets to darken up the inside. And then we crawl underneath the dash and we shine a flashlight up there. And sometimes you can actually see that there is a bulb there, but it's not lit. I also want you to adjust the intensity of the dashboard to see if that changes anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then last, what I want you to do is have you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay. I want you to call 480-598-1234. And you're going to ask for Jeff.
Jeff?
He's my parts manager. And you're going to say, I have permission from Mark to bother you. And would you guide me about who you guys use for digital dash repair in Phoenix? Because Jeff will know that answer, and I don't.
Okay.
So here's what you want to avoid. You don't want to go to shop A, who then sends the car to shop B, who then takes the car part and sends the part to shop D, who then subcontracts it to the guy who's going to fix it. You don't want all those people in the food chain. Now, sometimes those guys won't deal with consumers, so you'll have to go through your own garage or some other way. But most of the time, they'll deal with consumers. It really depends on this, Joe. If the dash has to come out, you're probably going to have somebody help you with this. But if you can take it there and park it and have your wife pick you up, then that's the better, and that's the path of least resistance.
Well, that's good. That's what I'll do. I'll call Jeff.
Okay.
And tell him Mark sent me.
Yeah, just say Mark said I had permission to talk to you. Otherwise, they're not going to let you talk to him because he's in charge of all the parts that run through our facility, and him and Sean have their hands full. But the Mark said I could talk to him. And as soon as he identifies what you're talking about, he'll know doggone well I sent him. So I sent you.
Yeah.
All righty, Joe. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome,
thanks,
sir. All righty, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. S&S Tire is in the West Valley, and it's important to know Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Pay attention here. They have the largest comprehensive selection of tires that you can imagine. And what's really nice about that is you can go in, and they'll look at the tire you have in your car. Then you ask them for a good, better, best number on three sets of tires, and they can pull that off for you. So you can look at the tire, you can see if you recognize the name, you can look at the tread wear and the temperature and the traction, which are information on the side of the tire, and they're happy to explain that to you. But the end of the day is you'll make an intelligent decision. For instance, you may want the cheapest set of tires because you're going to trade the car in a year. Or you may want a really good set of tires because your husband or his wife is getting ready to go to New Orleans. So it just depends, but you're in control of that. So again, S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. And they have every kind of tire from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. So S&S Tire. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to go till noon today, as we do every Saturday, 10 to noon, right here on KKNT. We talk about cars. I'm not here to sell you anything. I'm not here to sell you some gizmo you're going to plug into your car that tells you exactly what's wrong with your car, because none of that exists. And the idea that somebody's going to be able to diagnose your car from the cloud and tell you what's the matter with it when your check engine light comes on is as ridiculous as any other idea they have. The fact of the matter is when you're working on cars and you have a code, the code tells you what state the problem is in. It's in Ohio. Now you got to find the city, the street, the house number, the zip code. You got to go find the problem. And there's no way Mark Salem or any other master technician can be on the other end of the phone and tell you what's wrong with your car. We have to check fuel pressure. We can't do that on the phone. We have to check engine vacuum. We have to check mass airflow sensor readings. We can't do that. So the whole idea about somebody's going to fix your car over your entertainment system is crazy. Let's go to the phones. Harry, good morning to you. How are you?
Just fine, Mark. How are you?
Harry,
good morning,
Renee. Good morning. Thank you.
Harry, you need to contact Kurt because I talked to him last week and they hadn't heard you for a while. And I told him I was pretty sure that you had completed your probationary period.
Oh, my goodness.
And that you weren't hurt or sick or had been kidnapped for ransom. So would you touch base with Kurtz, please?
Yeah, I will. Comment on that. One of their guys called me here a couple months ago and, you know, had a Trailblazer that they work on. And he says, well, we see that you're, you know, going to be coming out for oil change or whatever. And he says, yeah, I usually get that after the first of the year. And then I said, I'm glad you called and whatever. So I'm driving along, and later on that day, my air conditioning starts blowing hot air.
It's their
so
fault.
I called them back, and I called the guy back, and I said, what is this? You guys have a sixth sense? And then it started working again, so I don't know.
And you, I think you just ought to carry that a little further and just say, I've already reported it to the police that maybe you put some kind of a confounding eye thing in my car to cause my air conditioning to become intermittent. And when I find it, then
I don't know. That was kind of eerie. They call me and I go to run an error and my air conditioning quits.
Yeah,
that is weird.
So I don't know.
Kurt has, Kurt has that big antenna on the top of his building.
Maybe that's
you
what
remember
it is.
That?
Yeah.
And no one knows what that is. Anyway.
I know what it is now.
I know. What's up, Harry?
Get the go find me, come to work deal.
Yeah.
I got a couple of, one question and a comment. I took my wife's car in, a Trailblazer, and to get the tires rotated and, you know, balanced, and at one of the major tire outfits. And I've never seen them do this before. They pull the tires off and run them over, and then the guy comes over with a power drill and a wire brush deal and does a little work around the
center ring. We just retrained.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Mating area that you cleaned it off really good, but
right, and that's I lost you there for a minute, but I knew which way you were going. We're going to use the wire brush to clean up the mating area where the back of the wheel hits the front of the drum or the axle, and we're also going to clean that out because sometimes, but not always, we center the wheel on that extrusion in the middle. So we want to make sure that the wheel is centered properly, and that's not a bad idea. Now that we don't do that nearly as much as the people in Pittsburgh and Chicago do it. but that is a good idea.
Yeah.
All right.
My other question is, I'm kind of looking to get a pickup again. Got rid of my Duramax and everything here a few years ago. And listening to some of your people call in on different vehicles, so Chevy has the pickup deal for the oil pump, the O-ring, and Ford, I don't know about Ford. They have, you know, different problems. And Dodge seems to have a problem with their Hemi. I know when your son was on the other day, a couple weeks ago, you know, saying something about a Hemi thing or ring or something like that.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, you know, I like the Toyotas. I'm not quite sure of the Nissans, but the Toyotas are pretty expensive. But they... I don't know. Do they have any problems that you're aware of?
Well, we'll chop down the tree one at a time. The O-ring problem on the General Motors has been fixed. It's been redesigned, so it only covers about 4 or 5 years, but that's about all.
Oh, okay.
I've got too many things to say about Fords, but I like Fords. I like people who own Fords because I get to fix them.
Oh, yeah, they make a lot of money.
Yeah. As far as the Dodge is concerned, the Hemi is a good motor. We may have been talking about stuck spark plugs, and if that's the case, it's on the Triton to Ford. I think that's what we were talking about. As far as the Toyota and the Nissan are concerned, I'm going to put the Toyota up there with the Chevrolet when it comes to quality and dependability. Toyota's going to cost more than the Chevrolet, but how the cars and trucks you keep, Harry, how many miles do you bail on? 100,000? 200? What do you do?
Well, my Trailblazer's only got like about 80 on it. When I sold my truck, it was a 2003, and I sold it a couple years ago, and it had like 75 or 80. So
okay.
We put maybe, you know, 10,000 a year on each vehicle.
I wouldn't worry about the high mileage end of it, because like you said, it's going to be a long time before you get there. And if you're bailing on them before 100,000, I think you could buy any one of those. And I would go with interior, the comfort, and then of course you got to make your wife happy. So there's just not you involved,
right,
me. It's there's three of us involved. There's you and me, and I'm not outvoting her. I'm always going to vote for her because that's the path of least resistance for me. So,
well, did you vote for her when she bought the Ford, or did?
No, she did that without my vote.
Was that a surprise?
Yeah, no, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. That's right. I liked the car, but I didn't really want a new car in the beginning, so that's what he gets.
Oh, she's mad at me because she was driving a Yukon with a 6.2 liter in it, and it was costing us an arm and a leg to keep that thing up, and I'll tell you why. She has a tendency to kiss curbs. The tires on that thing are $300 a piece.
I never kissed a curb in that car. But I get in this little edge, and for some reason I can't drive it because it's too small, because I've always had bigger cars, and I must have kissed 10 curves.
Well, your wheels show that.
I know that.
But the Yukon at Rural and Elliott in that gas station, we came over, and you had cut the right rear corner on that.
Oh,
and because it's all-wheel drive, you got to replace all four tires. And I just couldn't afford that and all of her drinking and
that
all that other
been
kind
your,
of stuff.
Your deal,
so anyway,
I don't even remember that.
I sold the Tahoe because I could make good money on it. And I thought we together would shop. Instead, she goes over to the Ford dealer kidnapped her. I think they actually kidnapped her. Came over and they said, we're going to sell your car really cheap because your husband talks bad about Fords and he's never going to admit there's a Ford in the family. And I don't. Renee has since changed her last name back to her maiden name.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, she drives the Ford. And I got to tell you something, Harry. Every once in a while, I have to drive it.
And
I have to wear a mask on my head because I don't want anybody to know I'm driving it. But it is a pretty nice car. It is a pretty nice car. How many miles we got on it?
51.
51,000. We had to replace the other day some weather stripping in the moonroof that's the size of a football field. Mm-hmm. But with the exception of that, we've not done anything else to that car in 50,000 miles.
No.
Just the weather stripping on the thing. And the price on the weather stripping installation and stuff was $300 or $400 somewhere else. And I think we bought this weather strip. How much was the weather strip?
Oh, it was like $90 a side or something
like that.
Okay, so
$180 for the weather strip. And then we had Eddie, one of our techs, install it.
Yeah.
So anyway, Harry, thank you very much. And I vote Toyota. If you want the best one of the menu you gave me, I vote the Toyota. You'll spend more. Second would be your Chevrolet. Thank you, Harry. And let's see. We're going to be taking a break in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour at 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my spousal unit of 43 years,
yes,
Renee.
Ma'am. Yes.
She's assigned herself my mother as to keep me in line.
Somebody
during the
has
radio
to
show.
Try.
Alrighty, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. Tom at Action Auto and I have been friends since the late 70s. He opened up his shop at Deer Valley and I-17 in 1983. And I've just known Tom such a very long time, I can tell you unequivocally, he's gonna make you happy. And if he can't, he'll tell you he can't. And if he can't fix your car, he'll refer you to somebody who can. But he's just a great guy. He has good talent. He has good employees. He's just a really good guy. He's kind of like the guy you hope your daughter brings home. Although Tom's married, so you can forget that. But that's the kind of guy he is. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that's been around serving North Phoenix, Deer Valley since 1983. Let's go to the phones. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Do you ever recommend installing an oil catch can on the PCV valve in an engine?
An oil catch can on the PCV valve. You're talking about teeing the PCV valve line and running it to an oil can or something?
Yeah, to an oil catch can, because they said in the new common rail fuel injection engines, you're taking that oil vapor and you're feeding it back into the engine, but it coats the intake valves and it coats the injection runners. So you get like oil gunk on there, so you have to have a can that collects the oil vapors from the PCV valve.
Okay. It's not that. It's not direct injection. We no longer spray the gas on the backside of the intake valve. We spray it directly into the engine. So therefore, we don't rinse the gasoline off the back of the intake valve anymore. The oil. We don't rinse the oil off the backside of the intake valve with gasoline. So because of that, we are turning the backside of the intake valve, which just delivers air now. It doesn't deliver a mixture of air and fuel. It just delivers air. And as a result of that, we're starting to find intake valves that are plugged solid and the car won't run. And so there is a repair process that involves pulling the head to get that all straightened out. So what they're doing is they're working on some different kinds of oils and they're working on some different kinds of gasolines. But some of the changes they have made have been very favorable. But the direct ignition or the direct fuel injection no longer sprays at the back of the valve. And every time the valve opens and closes, there's a film of oil on the back of the valve. So if we spray gasoline from a fuel injector in that area, we wash that minute amount of oil into the cylinder that doesn't generate any smoke. but it really has nothing to do with the positive crankcase ventilation where we're sucking the fumes off the engine and introducing them back into the intake manifold. So we're sucking them off the valve covers, and it's a concoction of air and unburnt fuel, hydrocarbons, and we're going to send them back into the intake manifold, and the intake manifold obviously is going to deliver that through the intake valve. Okay? Does that make sense?
Right. The only thing on YouTube, these videos, they show, like, in 3,000 miles, they're collecting, like, a third of a quart of oil. That's oil vapor that vented off your engine that would have been put back into your combustion chamber.
Well,
that, like, coats the rings and stuff.
Well, no, that okay. It's just another YouTube BS story. The fact that we've had PCV valves since 1958, 59, 60. We've been introducing fumes from engines into the intake manifold for what? How's that? 40 years? 50 years?
Yeah.
So, and those cars back then in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, with respect to their internal engine stability and what's the word I'm looking for? Efficiency is really what I'm looking for. On a 1 to 10 scale, back then they were a 3 and today we're a 9.5. So, all this idea about, backyard guys fixing this problem and I'm getting a third of a quarter, a third of a cup and all that kind of stuff. There's something wrong with the motor for it to be blowing
one
that,
minute.
Having that much blow by. That's all there is to it. That much blow by creates a problem. But there's nothing you can do to improve the PCV valve system other than making sure that the hose hasn't collapsed and making sure that you replace the PCV valve once a year. But PCV, positive crankcase ventilation, has been around for 50, 60 years, and there's nothing wrong with the way it works today. So there will always be somebody who has a gizmo that's going to improve something, and he has a YouTube video that shows why you should buy this stuff to rub all over your body, and it'll make your hair grow and make girls love you, and it'll make your toenails grow straight, and the hair in your nose stop growing.
Okay. Time to take a break. Yeah, all right. yeah, really.
So, Gil's, what's Gil say in the background?
Yeah, where can I buy that?
Oh, Gil, our engineer and the guy that actually puts the show on the air, he's saying into my ear, where can I buy some of that stuff?
Oh, my gosh.
But it's true. These things fix everything.
I know you get a bunch of stuff all the time that people want you to test and try, and you know it's not going to work.
Well, I bet we've tested it before. So it's just it's the same product with a different name.
Right.
Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Something that women like about a pickup man. And is that why you actually asked me out for the first time?
Yeah.
Huh?
We're not going to get into that story because it's a long – because you have three callers.
Oh,
so.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're exactly right. Let me tell you real quick about Kurt's Auto Repair. Last week we had Kurt and Eric and Jeff on, and we had a ball.
Yep.
But I want to tell you something. Kurt's a master. Uh-huh. Eric's a master, and Jeff's a master. You got three masters.
Right.
Most shops don't even have one.
Right.
But they've got three. The fun that we had and the what talent that Eric and Jeff brought to the table when it come to asking for symptoms, discussing the issue, and coming to some kind of a conclusion, they actually are better than I am together.
Yeah.
Not independent of one another, but together.
Oh, okay. Three so, to one, huh?
Yeah.
I think you're bragging, but go ahead.
No. 2-1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, me and Kurt against Eric and Jeff.
Kurt
and I are not going to acquiesce to Eric and Jeff, but Mark alone will acquiesce to Eric and Jeff.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, Kurt's is at I-17 in Bell. He's on the northeast corner. You can tell I know him. You can tell I like him. And if you live in anywhere near I-17 in Bell, Kurt's is a great place to go. Let's go to Les. Les, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, I wanted your opinion. I got an older 81 Ford truck that drives, the cooling fan is driven directly off of the water pump and everything. And I was thinking putting an electric fan or a fan clutch or maybe going with a flex fan, but I'm not sure which of those would be better savings or a better way to go.
I can help you. Why are you changing the fan?
A little bit more mileage. It works fine, cools, everything works good. Just looking at it, I'm only getting like 13 miles, and I was kind of thinking it might get me more miles.
Well, have you been passing emissions on a regular basis?
Yep.
Okay. Then I can tell you right now, there ain't no fuel coming out of the tailpipe of that truck. So it's not going to be an issue where the engine itself is malfunctioning, or you got a float that's heavy on the carburetor, or you've got some oxygen sensor that's all fouled up. So the fact that you're passing is really good. I'm sure you have a fan clutch that's mechanically driven by a fan belt that's connected to the water pump. Would that be fair?
No, I don't have. I've got a direct drive six-blade fan that's solid. There's
okay.
No fan clutch on it.
Okay.
That was I saw a fan clutch as an option, and you know, I could put on it. But
I would think that you would, if you buy a fan clutch, you're almost surely going to have to buy a fan that goes with it, because the fan mounts to the back of the
right.
fan clutch. I would think that's your best option. A flex fan would be my second, and I would tell you under no circumstances should you put one or two electric fans on that, because you will be so unhappy, and it's just a terrible thing to do. It's a design issue. You have to have an aluminum radiator, and then there has to be all kinds of duct work, and the cars that have electric cooling fans are quite different than the cars that you're talking about, which have brass and copper radiators, and they have a wide open grill. So if you're going to do anything, that flex fan, obviously after so many RPMs, the blades are going to straighten out for you, and so they won't you won't have nearly the drag. The other option would be go call a wrecking yard and find a fan and a fan clutch, and then turn around and take the fan and get yourself a good fan clutch and put it on. But here's the downside to that. When the fan clutch locks up, it's going to sound like you just shifted from fourth gear to second gear. Even though you didn't, it's going to sound like that.
Right.
It's going to take 1,000 or 2,000 miles to break that new fan clutch in, but after you get going about 45 miles an hour, then the fan clutch disengages, and that gives you the least amount of load. So,
okay.
So maybe
the fan clutch would be the that best fan clutch, option for that.
Yeah, first pick is fan clutch, and you are going to get a new fan, but I think you can buy one at a wrecking yard. And the second thing would be flex fan, and the electric fans aren't even on my list of options. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome, Les. Deborah, good morning to you. How is it I can help you?
Oh, thank you so much. I've tried. And turn it on. Sometimes I have FM and sometimes I don't, and I cannot figure out the reason.
Okay, Deborah, what I want to, I lost you for about 6 seconds there, and I would like very much for you to just give me the front side of that again, okay?
I bought a 2010 Toyota Corolla for when it was 2 years old, and it had 24,000 miles on it. The first year was fine. After this, and the second year, my FM radio started to go out, and I tried to do some research. I took it to the dealer twice, and they didn't know what the problem was, and it didn't go out when it needed to so they could see it. I'm guessing it is the antenna, but I don't know. But sometimes in the morning when I turn it on to go to work, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Okay, let me ask you some questions.
I tried to research it, and I don't know.
Okay, let me ask you some questions. Do you listen to AM or FM more?
FM.
Okay. The antenna is more important on the AM side than it is on the FM side. I'm going to send you someplace else if you don't mind. There's a stereo shop in Tempe called Sounds Good to Me. That's the name of the store. Sounds Good to Me. They've been around since I was in high school, and I'm north of 60. These guys have just waved their magic wand for my customers I don't know how many times. Now, it could very well be you have a bad radio that's intermittent, got a broken circuit board in it, and they will discuss with you your options. You may say, I just want an AM/FM radio. They can put one in. They can make it fit. They can wire it up, and it will work perfectly. But Sounds Good to Me is on Broadway in Tempe, and it's just the best radio, stereo shop I've ever seen in my life. they put fancy sound system in big fast boats that are worth $500,000 all the way down to small old cars like old Mustangs, and they upgrade the radio or fix the old ones. So I would take it over to Sounds Good to Me. Okay. Tell them Mark Salem sent you, and then wink at him and say, he said you'll never be able to fix this, and that will make them smile.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Deborah. You're welcome. And for those of you that I want you to know, I didn't tell Deborah to mention my name because I get a kickback.
Right.
I there's no bird dog fee here. That's what they call it in our industry, a bird dog fee. I go find somebody, send it to you, you kick back some money to me. That doesn't happen. I never take money for referrals, ever, ever, ever. If you go in there, you go in there. But I'm not getting a part of your bill, and I'm not getting money from the shop. I just want to make sure that you knew that. Chad, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning. My question's about the transmission, and I've just bought a used 2013 Chrysler 300C, and in my manual, it doesn't say when I need to change the transmission fluid, but when I talked to the dealer, I took it in, they said around 60,000 miles is recommended. But when they took it back, they later called me about an hour and a half later and told me it was a lifetime sealed transmission and I never have to change the fluid. And I've never heard of that, so I didn't understand.
Oh, that is funny. The dealer said 60, and then when they get it in there, they've already told you 60, and so the technician looks at the service writer and he looks at the other people and he goes, what are you guys, idiots? This is a sealed unit. So you sold him a 60K service,
yes.
But we can't do one. All right, to answer your question, a sealed unit is a very good unit, but they typically have some kind of unwritten service between 100,000 and 125,000. Now, here's what we do. The transmission has two cooler lines that takes fluid forward and into a small radiator, so to speak. So one of them pushes fluid forward, and the other is a return to the transmission. Does that make sense to you? Okay. What we do is we take those lines and interrupt them. And so on the push side, that goes, for just sake of argument, it goes into a 5-gallon bucket. So the dirty fluid comes out of the transmission fluid, it comes out of the transmission, and it's deposited into a 5-gallon bucket. On the suck side, where we got fluid going back in, that's a suction side, we have a 5-gallon bucket filled with new transmission fluid.
Yeah.
So we're pushing the old out, pushing the new in. And when the old starts going from brown to cherry red, we stop. That's going to cost you somewhere south of $200. And you'll do that at $100 to $125. Oh, well.
For this transmission, it takes 12 quarts.
Oh, okay. And if it's a synthetic fluid, then automatically your $60 worth of fluid at 12 quarts at $5 is what?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's more than $5.
Is it?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's probably 10 or 12.
A quart of synthetic ATF?
Yes, my dear.
I hate it when you correct me.
Yes, my dear.
Okay, so if it's 10 times 12 is 120.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking another 120, 125 on top of that, or even if it's an hour and a half, we're talking 180 plus 120, so we're still at 300?
Yeah, 300, okay. 350 maybe. I don't know.
Okay, but we could still open it up. We could say 4 to 450.
Right.
And let me tell you something that happened the other day, Chad, and you can just take it for whatever it's worth. Guy calls me up on the radio and he tells me that he gets an estimate for $800 to replace the headlight bulb, and they tell him that they have to remove the front bumper. And I say to him, in certain cars, that's the truth. And he says, are you kidding me? And I said, no, I'm not kidding you. So I said, if you want to bring it by, I'll look at it for you. I felt sorry for him, $800. Yeah. So he's sitting in the lobby. This is a true story. We take it into the shop, and within 31 minutes, I walk back out and say, here's your light bulb.
Mm-hmm. It was tiny. It didn't even look like a light bulb, really. Yeah.
Right. But, I mean, we didn't take the bumper off either.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I say to him, this is like a $35 thing. Do you want me to replace this? And he says, yes. And he goes, I need to talk to you because I want to know why you did it in 31 minutes and they're quoting me 8 hours. I said, I'll get to that. So we plug in the new one, as you well know, and it doesn't work either.
Mm-hmm.
So the plug is bad.
Okay.
Then we look and we find out that the heat from the headlight causes the plug to melt, and they have a new, quote-unquote, redesigned plug. So we get the plug, we install it, we put his old bulb back in, it works fine, and we button it all up, and I don't remember what the bill was, but it was less than $150.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's really wrapped up pretty tight because he gets an estimate of $800. I don't know why they gave you the estimate, but I feel pretty confident that we're going to be in the $400 range in the independent market for your 12-quart synthetic fluid transmission service at 1 to 125. So I think what this tells both of us is you need to shop that. So when it comes time for you to do that, okay, then you need to shop that. And I can tell you there's one guy that left our shop for $150 and he didn't pay $800. And let me tell you what happened. You can take the coolant reservoir off his car and slide it over to the side. Then you go get the technician who has the smallest, petitest hands, not the guy that has tennis rackets on the end of his arms, but the small, petite hands. Or you go get one of the female service riders. She sticks her hand through this hole and she unclips the bulb and pulls it out. You plug a new one in and you put it back, and then you put the four or five screws that are holding the coolant recovery jug on there, and you're done. So, yes, you can pull the front bumper cover, and you can do all of that work for 8 hours, but it's gray-haired guys, seasoned people that know their shortcuts. So, if you're honest, you play by the rules, and if you're not, you don't, and I don't have any comment about anything else besides that.
You don't? You're out of comments for the day? That's good.
Do you want to ride home?
Because we're almost done.
Folks, we're up here in Payson. We bring our horses up here. They're true snowbirds because they come up to Payson during the summer and go home to Tempe during the winter. Yeah. So we're sitting here right now. The meadow's outside. There's elk all over the meadow. We've seen two coyotes go by. We see lots of big turkey vultures. Our dogs are sitting at our feet. And life can't get any better than this,
no,
can it?
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
But most of the time, Monday through Friday, we're working our tail ends off. And but it is, I did have to come up to check the horses.
1 minute.
And we'll see what, and they're fine, other than the fact we got to hang up the show here in another minute and run and get some hay for them because I don't have enough food.
Because you let them run out of food.
They're not starving. Trust me. Okay, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K. Salem spelled like the cigarette, for those of you older folks that know what I'm talking about. mark@marksalem.com. You have a question, a problem, email me. I'll get back to you. Please give me your phone number, because if you give me your phone number, I'm always going to have some questions I want to ask you, because the diagnostic procedure is you tell me something, I ask you a question, you tell me something, I ask you a question, so I need to do that.
And he doesn't type very well.
And I don't type very fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
He's kind of one finger.
Shut up. And then in addition to that, it's important to know I'm going to call you from my block cell phone, okay? So I'm sorry, but that's what I have to do. So otherwise, I give my phone number to 100 people, and I answer the phone for the rest of my life. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.